This episode is brought to you by Element, spelled L-M-N-T. What is Element? Let me tell you, it's a delicious, sugar-free, electrolyte drink mix. As a coach, we are constantly trying to find the best products for our athletes to train and compete at their highest level. Element is a great alternative to other commercial recovery and performance drinks and has enough sodium, potassium, and magnesium to get you feeling and performing your best. Plus, it has zero sugar, no artificial ingredients, and is gluten-free. With a variety of delicious flavors, you are guaranteed to find one your taste buds will love. I know our athletes love the citrus salt, while my favorite is grapefruit. We keep a variety box in the office, and our athletes stop by every day on their way to practice or games to load up. At this point, they won't even touch another product, and I am replenishing our supply on a weekly basis. Without amazing products and sponsors like Element, our podcast would not be possible. Right now, when you click on our affiliate link and place your first order, Element is giving us a 150% commission. That means if you spend $100, we get $150 to keep this podcast running. The best deal you can get is to buy an insider bundle. You buy three boxes, you get one free. And if you click our affiliate link, drinkelement.com/JustinClimo, we will get a commission and you will get a free sample pack with every purchase. Last thing, Element might have the best return policy on the planet. If you don't love it, you will be instantly refunded. Let's talk about sleep for a minute. I've had a terrible time getting productive rest and sleep for the last few years. And since poor sleep can lead to all sorts of health problems, I'm constantly on the hunt for a better night's sleep. Recently, I came across a new product called Beam Dream, which has delivered the best sleep I've had in a long time. The first time I tried it, I fell asleep on the couch within a half hour and didn't wake up until the next day. Since starting my new routine with Beam, my sleep performance has improved significantly according to both my Oura Ring and Whoop Band. Yes, I use both at once because why not have more data? If you are interested in upgrading your sleep, I invite you to try Beam Dream. Today, my listeners get a special discount on Beam's Dream Powder, their best-selling healthy hot cocoa for sleep with no added sugar. Now available in delicious seasonal flavors like cinnamon cacao, sea salt caramel, and white chocolate peppermint. Better sleep has never tasted better. A recent clinical study revealed that 93% of users wake up feeling more refreshed, and 93% reported that Dream helped them get a more restful night's sleep. If you're looking for a way to get some rest and you have trouble sleeping, I highly recommend this product. If you want to try Beam's best-selling Dream Powder, take advantage of their biggest sale of the year and get up to 50% off for a limited time. When you go to shopbeam.com/contacts, discount auto applied at checkout, no code is necessary. That's shopbeam.com/contacts for up to 50% off. If you're a longtime listener, you might know that I've been drinking AG1 for a couple of years. If you're not a longtime listener, then know that I drink AG1 on a daily basis. When I first started drinking it daily, I could feel a real difference in my daily health. I had more energy, I felt more relaxed, I could focus better. That's because AG1 is a foundational nutritional supplement that supports your body's universal needs, like gut optimization, stress management, and immune support. Since 2010, AG1 has led the future of foundational nutrition, continuously refining their formula to create a smarter and better way to elevate your baseline health. I recommend AG1 to all of my family and friends because it has worked so well for me. So much so that my two eldest children have become regular users of the product. My daughter, who has been studying abroad, recently asked us to bring her more product when we went to visit her at Thanksgiving. My other daughter, who's a freshman in college, regularly contacts us to make sure we send her more product. AG1 has been transformational as it has replaced all of the needless ramekins of vitamins and minerals that I used to take. If you really want to take ownership of your health, it starts with AG1. Try AG1 and get a free one-year supply of vitamin D3, K2, and 5 free AG1 travel packs with your first purchase. Go to drinkag1.com/contacts That's drinkag1.com/contacts to order your own supply and start on your journey to better health. Welcome to the Contacts Coaching Podcast, dedicated to bringing you practical ideas from coaches, sharing what they have learned throughout their career. The show is designed to serve as a digital database of mentorship from a wide network of coaches whose innovative, reflective, and diverse knowledge may offer ideas to enhance your experience. In addition to sport-specific expertise, each episode also dives into the ways in which culture, strategy, and tactics can cross from one discipline to another. I'm your host, Justin Klein. Welcome back to the Contacts Coaching Podcast. We are joined today by Jeremy Main from Orem High School in Utah, calling all the way in. Thanks for being here today, Coach. Looking forward to learning more about Utah athletics.
Thanks, Coach. Appreciate you having me on.
All right, let's dive in here. Why don't you take us through your background as a coach? How'd you end up in the profession, ultimately becoming the athletic director? What was the process like for you getting into it at the beginning, and then any steps along the way?
Yeah, sports was just a part of what we did as a family. My dad was my coach in everything. I got experiences, as I think about it, that kind of prepared me for this position, prepared me to be a coach. My dad coached youth football and basketball and baseball and everything that we could possibly do out there. He worked at the high school as an SRO. He volunteered and helped at the high school when I was young, coaching football. So a lot of my memories as a kid was going to the high school, watching football games, watching basketball games, watching baseball games, rubbing shoulders with those coaches. My first job was actually my junior year. I had to do a little bit of community service. And so I helped out with coaching Little League soccer. And I loved it. I was that guy with the clipboards. And I was like kicking and screaming Will Ferrell on the sideline. Loved it. Had a great experience with it. And right out of high school, before I prepared to go on an LDS mission, I got the call up to be the head freshman football coach at Tooele High School. And I was the offensive coordinator. Again, another situation where I loved it. I was consumed by it. I wanted to get better. Wanted to learn. Wanted to grow. Drawing up playbooks and giving them to all the kids and just diving in. Went and served a mission in Chicago, Illinois. And while I was on my mission, I met a family there in one of my last areas that ended up having a pretty big impact on kind of my story and my journey. Came home. I was planning to play football down at Southern Utah University. They got a new coach there at the time while I was away on my mission. And he took away all the kids that weren't his recruits. And so I had a preferred walk-on at BYU. And so I met with the coaches there and was getting ready to enroll and do that thing. And got a phone call from that said family saying that their daughter, their sister had come from Kent State, was a volleyball player at Kent State and came to BYU on volleyball scholarship or as a volleyball walk-on. And so they said, hey, she doesn't know anybody out there. To take her around, did a little bit of matchmaking, and she eventually became my wife, and that's my wife, Jenny. Her family, like I said, was from Chicago, and so when we were trying to figure out what we wanted to do, we had some family dynamics that I didn't mesh with too well, and so we decided to go back out there and live in Chicago and finish our schooling, and so I wanted to continue to pursue playing football, and so I was taking a school tour of North Central College, which is a Division III school in Naperville, and as I was walking through the gym, the basketball team was in there having a little bit of an open gym session. And one of the coaches pulled me inside and said, you don't want to play football here. You want to play basketball here. And invited me to an open gym. So I guess they did pretty well. And he offered me a preferred walk-on position there. And I played there for a season, which was a blast. We ended up winning the CCAW that year. And it was a private school. And it was going to be very expensive. And I didn't want to have that debt hanging over me for the rest of my life going to those private schools. And so I ended up transferring over to Northern Illinois University. Took a year trying to figure out what I wanted to do out there, but I knew it was going to be something in coaching. And so I enrolled in the coaching program there. While I was doing that, I was working full-time and decided to volunteer at a school in Oswego, Illinois. The high school is Oswego East High School. And so going to school, working full time, volunteering with football, with basketball, with track, doing the public announcing with softball and with baseball, doing anything I could to try to get into school. Got asked to play in the early morning old man ball with the principal and, you know, coaches there. And really, at the end of the day, that's what got me in. Did that for 3 years, finished up my teaching degree, spent three mornings every week, 5:30, going up to that high school playing ball with the principal, assistant principal, people at the central administration office. Graduated about a week later. I went in for an interview. I'm going to do the air quotes interview, and was offered a job at Oswego East High School and spent about 10 years there coaching football at all the different levels. Ended up being the special teams coordinator, JV defensive coordinator, and varsity defensive line coach. Coached hoops, sophomore coach, was the sophomore girls coach for a long time. Then became a varsity coach for the girls program there until about 2018. Coached track for a few years. One of my favorite parts of that was being the spring radio announcer call guy for the soccer team, baseball team, softball team. It was a great experience doing that. Allowed me to get to know those sports a little bit more and then get to know some of those parents and some of those players. 2018, we had a pulse that we wanted to leave. There was some stuff coming from the city out to the suburbs that we didn't really mesh with. It was making things challenging, pretty expensive to live in certain parts of Chicago, Illinois. And so we wanted to get back out west, and we had a family friend direct us to Rock Springs, Wyoming, which was a unique experience. Became the head boys basketball coach up there, coached football, was the sophomore girls volleyball coach for a season. And my big thing was strength and conditioning. I ran some of the summer stuff and some of the off-season stuff for a lot of those sports there. Was up there for 3 years and was contacted by another friend saying that there was an opening down here in Orem and trying to get a little bit closer to home, closer to cousins and aunts and uncles and family. So 2021, came down here, became the head girls basketball coach at Orem High School. Again, hopped on and joined the football program as well. Last year, I joined the baseball program, all before knowing that I had been slated to take over as the athletic director. The athletic director had been here for 36 years, last 10 as an athletic director, and he was retiring. Looked at my experience and being at other places, and they interviewed and took over as athletic director this last year.
That's a mouthful. Let me figure out here, going back through my notes, where I want to start. And if I counted correctly, you went to three different colleges. Is that right? Or four, yes, if we count Southern Utah.
I never actually got to go to Southern Utah. That's where I had signed my national letter of intent.
Yeah.
Worked for a year to save up, and then went on my mission and came back with the intent of going there, but never actually got to enroll there because they had going away my scholarship.
Yeah. Okay. So what I want to know is, and I'm gonna do this all wrapped in together, because the LDS mission piece is always fascinating to me in regards to the takeaway and how you apply that coming back. Right. That's a big part of why you're out there, in addition to doing fellowship and mission work for the church. But I'm curious about that 2 years you spent, other than finding your future wife. What were the takeaways that you've been able to apply professionally over the last 15 years to your day job? And in addition to that, the reason I asked about the college stops is those transitions and the way in which you navigate those brings its own lessons, obviously, right? Picking up, starting over. So if you could weave those two together, I'd love to know how you lean on those things throughout your day-to-day and how you've used those throughout the course of your career to enhance the lives of students.
The LDS mission is a unique thing in that you're thrown out there. You get some training. I wasn't speaking a foreign language. And so you go through this training process to learn how to be a missionary, how to fellowship, how to go and do street contacts and door-to-door stuff. And your stops are usually 6 weeks to 3 months at an area. And then you pick up and you go and you're with another person, another companion. You're always with a companion. You could be there for, again, 6 weeks to 3 months or to 6 months in some cases, and then you pick up and you go again. You do that for 2 years. And so when you're out there, you have this hierarchy of leadership, and you have what's called a mission president. And our mission president was a doctor, and he was big into academia. And so anytime we'd have meetings, he was always like, man, I need you to write a paper. need you to write some type of an essay on what you've been doing, on what you've learned, on maybe some scripture stuff and how that's going to apply. So I learned a lot about academia. I learned a lot about how to write papers. I learned a lot about how to study. I learned a lot about how to deal with other people, how to deal with rejection, because especially in places like Wheaton, you have the Wheaton Bible College in Illinois, people don't want to hear about religion. They don't want to hear about what you have to say. They're set in their ways. And so you just have to deal with the rejection piece of it and learn to pick yourself back up and go and try to stay motivated, because what you believe in is what you believe in and you believe it to be true. And that was a huge benefit, not just the meet my wife piece. Obviously, that's a huge piece of my life, but it was more about learning about life, learning about myself, who I am, what I wanted to be, really what my true intentions were as a human being, and how I was going to use that to benefit and to bless other people in whatever I decided to do. And so lending that to your point about going to different colleges, again, it was a preparation. I wasn't planning on going to 3 or 4 different colleges. I was hoping to go and play football and do my thing, and things don't always work out the way you want it to. And so when I was playing basketball at North Central, again, I was like, man, I love this, love the culture. We won the conference that year, and we went and played St. Thomas out of Minnesota in the Division III national playoffs. And again, great experience. But as we started looking at finances and being young and married, it was like, man, this is not sustainable. We can't do this. We can't dig ourselves a hole. And so trying to put my future first, we started making those decisions on going to different colleges and trying to make it work. I knew I wanted to be in education in some way, shape, or form, whether that was going to be in being a personal trainer, working at a gym, doing something in strength and conditioning. It was really one of those eye-opening, and the people that have had the most influence on me were coaches, were educators, my mission president, leaders that I had on my mission. I'm like, man, I need to use that platform and use the experiences that I've had to create a platform to teach. And so that's led me to where I am today.
Yeah, I would imagine that the way you described the mission, and I knew that people moved within those 2 years, but the way in which you just shared, it's 6 weeks to 3 months, and then you're starting over, fit into that mold of what you ended up having to chase afterwards. So I like how you frame that. The second piece that I normally ask is, what did you need to figure out when you took over, right? And you've had a lot of different hats here. So what I want to do is have you pick a handful of moments, both as a head coach, as an assistant coach, now as an athletic director, where I think I counted 7 different sports you've coached throughout your high school coaching career here. I probably missed one. But you feel you're prepared, right? Whatever your background happens to be. And even in this AD role, right? You've coached all these sports. You're doing all these things at the school. You've been on a mission. You've learned to lead. And now you're in the chair. And right, you're never ready. But what did, at a handful of these tipping points for you, can you share a story of what are some things that you thought you were ready for, but you needed to figure out right away once you realized it was sitting in front of you?
Sure. I grew up watching my dad. He worked with a lot of great coaches, Hall of Fame coaches. He himself was a phenomenal coach. He got it. And so when it came to coaching, I felt pretty comfortable. I didn't really struggle with understanding concept and scheme. And what I tried to do is take as much as I possibly could around me. So when I was a young coach back in Chicago, grinding, going to school, volunteering, my nights were consumed with going to every single game I possibly could. And I'm sitting right behind home bench with my notepad, and I'm not asking about, not wondering about plays and scheme. I'm wondering about what he's talking to the boys or the girls about in the timeout. And I'm taking notes, and I'm beg, borrowing, and stealing and trying to copy as much as I could from these other coaches. And I had great coaches that I worked for. And one thing that I learned early on was that how it works for one coach and how his delivery or her delivery works isn't going to be the same way that I do it. And so I led to a story. I went to a conference, and in Chicago, they do the Nike tour, the Nike PGC tour with conferences. And so they have these coaches that come in and all different walks of life, all different levels of coaches. And this one, Bob Starkley, he's actually an assistant coach right now at LSU. And he came in, he talked about when he was a young coach, he wanted to learn as much as he possibly could about how to be a great coach. And so he went on this tour, and he was going to go do some recruiting. And so he goes to Bloomington, Indiana, and he goes to Bob Knight. He goes to Indiana University. And he wants to learn about what makes Bobby Knight such a great coach. And so he went to his practice. It was all arranged for him. And he walks in and he sees these trainers sitting off to the side, these GMs. and they've got whistles and they've got the towel on and they've got water bottles and it's all organized and all the guys run out and the coaches run out, they form all these lines, and it's the most organized, structured practice he's ever seen in his life. And he's taking notes and he's filling up his notebook. And he's, this is how I want to be. This is how I'm going to coach. On his way out, he goes to Louisville, Denny Crum, legendary coach, and he goes and watches his practice. He got one GM, maybe another trainer sitting off to the side. They're smoking a cigarette while they're in the gym. Got a towel over their shoulder. Guys come out whenever they want to come out and talks about it's unorganized. There's no structure. They just play around, throw the ball around. And he goes, man, I don't want to do this. I don't want to stay here anymore. I don't know how this guy is so good, but this was the worst practice I've ever seen. 4 days later, Louisville and Indiana play in Indiana, and Louisville wins by about 35. And so he comes back and he goes, what I found out is that Denny Crum knew his players more than anybody else, and that there's not one right way to do things. It's more about learning from the kids that you have, the players that you have, adapting your own style, not trying to steal or take away. It's okay to do those things, but be more genuine in terms of who you are as a coach. And so I had to learn that early on. I would try to steal these things from other coaches and try to apply it. And sometimes it worked, but sometimes it didn't. And so I would have to reflect and be like, man, I need to make this my own and create my own brand of who I wanted to be and create my own philosophy and create my own being and my own drive in terms of where I wanted the team to go. And everywhere I went on as a missionary, it was the same thing. I wanted to come in and apply my own thing. This is how I've done it everywhere else. And that's just, that doesn't work all the time. And the biggest struggle that I had was going from Chicago, where it's very high level basketball. That's all they do. That's all they want to do. They're trying to get out of their circumstances. And that took me to Wyoming. And I came in thinking, man, I'm going to change the culture here. I'm bringing this high level of basketball IQ and strategy and scheme. And it didn't work. I had to change and I had to adapt and do the things that I needed to do to make it. It's all relative, right? Relative to where I'm at that particular time. And not necessarily level it down or bring it down, but make it more applicable to their skill set and where they are. And so again, long story, a lot of talking, but that's what I had to learn early on that still continues with me to this day, taking over.
Perfect. So you mentioned the word, how do you create your own, you didn't say brand, maybe you did, but something along those lines, right? And you're finding your voice and what works for you. So what would you say at this point, after all these years and all these different stops and all these different sports and roles and assistant and freshman coach and varsity coach, boys, girls, etc., what would you say is the best thing you do in your program that were you to pick up and leave and go somewhere tomorrow that would be part of it? What are a couple of those things that are non-negotiables that, regardless of your audience, which you're going to have to adapt it to a certain degree for them, right? The anchors are still the same.
I think for me, it's going to the Gino Urayama thought process is I don't really want to try to coach energy. That's a non-negotiable for me. Buy-in and commitment. You decided to do this thing, so we're gonna get the most out of you as we possibly can, and I'm gonna give you the same thing. Something that I really believe in, and everywhere I've been, and it started when I was a young coach, was developing student athlete leaderships and leadership teams and leadership councils. When I was in Illinois, we actually had what we called it the SALT program. We met every Wednesday, all the captains and leaders of our programs, whether it was fine arts, whether it was dance, whether it was our athletics, we all met and we had a kind of a content or a curriculum that we used. And it just helped these kids. Sometimes we ask these kids to be captains. We have these kids to be leaders, and maybe they don't come from a background that has that, or they don't know how to do that. So we give them resources and tools on how to be leaders. And so that's the biggest driving force for me, is at the end of the day, the wins and losses, obviously that's what we're trying to do. It's fun to win, but we're trying to develop leaders that can carry on and that can turn around and help other people. And so that's one thing that's a non-negotiable for me is we need you to be a leader. And whatever that entails, whether that's a title that you wear or whether that's just something that you do in your own particular little world, is whether that's in the locker room, whether that's in your classroom, is you're all going to be a leader in some way.
What does that curriculum look like?
So it's actually adapted from a program that was started at a high school in Georgia. I can't remember his name now, but he developed this curriculum. It was in the early 90s, and it's basically on the premise of learn, lead, and leverage. So you're going to learn using the resources that are provided to you through this program. You're going to then use that and apply that to lead other people and then leverage that, the experience that you have to create change and create culture within your program. And so we've modified it a little bit here at Orem High School to make it more applicable to what we're doing today in the world of instant results and gratification and social media and all those type of things, just applying it to what the culture that currently exists here. And we've had guest speakers come in. We had a compliance officer from BYU come in and talk about what they do. We've had athletes. We've had Chad Lewis come in, former Philadelphia Eagle Hall of Fame tight end come in. He lives in the area, talks a little bit about leadership and how to apply that and surrounding yourself with greatness and what the pursuit of excellence looks like in your own particular program. And so there is some structure to it in terms of what the overall program offers you, but there's a lot of adaptation to make it yours in particular at your school.
Awesome. And what I'm also getting at is the design of this show, let's call it, from the beginning was to be a digital database of mentorship. So is there a name if people want to chase this down, if they reach out to you after the show, can you send it to them, right? Are those things available for people that are listening to maybe try to implement something on their own?
Yeah. So if you go on, so it's Ideals Leadership is really what it's called. And then it has different facets of how you can take their curriculum. There's an athletic side of things. There's just an overall program side of things. There's an opportunity. If you've gone through the program, you've done SALT in different ways, you can be a part of their alumni where you have the opportunity to teach, to lead out. They're involved in some associations across the country, really prevalent down in Georgia, where they're a part of coaches associations and athletic directors associations, in a scholastic associations where they teach some of this content. So it's idealsleadership.org/SALT. And you go on there and there's a kind of a methodology that they use where it's that going back to that learn, lead, and leverage. It started back in, it's been adapted. I think their new update was about 2011, 2012. They got some new people in there to change it up and make it a little more modern. But it's, again, the design is to convert current leadership and school curriculum into a lifestyle.
Thank you for sharing that. I'll also put the links in the show notes after this for people that are listening. Let me go to this next piece. So you've heard a few of these episodes in my soapbox is how the youth sports industrial complex is destroying athletics for kids. And sports specialization isn't exactly helping that either. And given your background coaching pretty much everything under the sun, are there specifics that you can offer that have translated from one discipline to another that you utilize as a coach, that you've offered to your coaches as the athletic director, that you've seen one of the other teams that you're not coaching do, that you've appropriated, that you can offer stories? Because I don't think everyone is always looking outside of their discipline. And part of this is also trying to help people understand that there are resources all around you, right? So when you're at the school in Wyoming, which I imagine is a pretty small place, and there's not a ton of workshops you can go to, where do you learn? And you can look, oh, hey, I'm going to go watch tennis practice and see what this person's doing, even though I'm the basketball coach. Can you talk a little bit about that and how you've experienced that over your career and what your approach is now based on that?
Like I said, growing up, I would try to involve myself in as much as I possibly could. That's what you do as an athlete. You try to develop different skills and different modalities of movement to allow you to be a better athlete. And I think that lends itself to coaching as well. One of my suggestions is always get involved in as much as you can. Lead with vulnerability. That's from a book that I'm reading. It's okay to be vulnerable. It's okay to learn new things. As an athletic director, I tried to stay away from using this phrase, but drinking from a fire hose. It's you have to learn a lot, and you have a lot of different people coming at you and biting at you with, this is how it's always been done. And so you try to understand that in a different way. For me, I tried to involve myself in coaching so that, again, when I became the AD, a lot of people were like, man, that's going to be a lot of work for you, and it's going to be hard and this and that. I felt like I'd been involved in so much that it was an easy transition. I could relate to the tennis kids. I could relate to the soccer kids. I could relate to all these kids and the coaches because I either coached it or I played it or I went to watch these professional games or whatever it was. For me, obviously, we want to try to build the whole body of work when you're talking about an athlete. And so trying to get them involved in as much as possible. where I'm in a situation now. My son, he's 12 years old, and he's really pulled to try to do the basketball thing. He's tall. My wife is tall. I'm tall. So he's trying to pull to do the basketball thing, get as many games as possible. And he's like, I want to go play football. I want to go do this. I want to go do that. And so there's a lot to be taught from other coaches. We have this book share that we do. And one of the parts of this book called Pursuit of Excellence talks about Benjamin Franklin back in the 1700s. He created what was called this junto. And this junto was all of his buddies, about 12, 13 guys got together every month. And they talked about morals and philosophy and discipline. And the kind of the rules were, was there was no combating. It was just learning from each other. And so as much as I possibly can, I try to surround our coaches in some type of a symposium with other coaches, try to link other coaches from one sport, one season to another season to be a mentor. When I first got here, I got linked up with our track coach who had been here for 20 years. He's won numerous state championships, and I just am a sponge and soaking it all in. And so trying to create situations where you're putting coaches with other coaches, and then that continued to trickle down to our athletes. So we had this called it the Tiger Club program, where we had a senior, junior or senior upperclassmen. They were linked with freshmen or sophomore and of different sports to try to learn about leadership and learn about their sport and learn about their training and kind of what they do to allow them to see, maybe this is something I want to be involved in. And so I think it helps our student athletes. It helps our programs. It builds numbers within our programs, and it just gives kids and it gives coaches experiences that maybe they wouldn't have had otherwise.
So strategically, how do you fight the messaging in society, which is the opposite of that these days?
Trying to build and create positive relationships with our feeder programs. So doing the same thing, we have a basketball coach here who he's the first one to cheer for our football guys. When it comes basketball season, he's trying to convince them just to do basketball stuff, right? So it's a juggling act, because do you really get better as a basketball player if you don't touch the ball for 7 months? Are you becoming a better athlete? And you're looking at the idea of what 2.9% of all high school athletes are going to go on and play at the next level, but 100% of those kids are going to be adults, and they're going to need to have those various experiences. And so we try to build this understanding that the feeder programs are essential, but the feeder programs are going to share. We're going to try to build and create commonalities with our feeder programs so that it's okay to share those kids. That's what we want. And I know for me, when I was first offered a scholarship, those coaches, they saw me play football, but they also wanted to see me play basketball. They wanted to see how I did on the track or how I did in tennis or whatever it is that I played. They wanted to see that. And that's where my opportunities came. And some of the kids that we have here at Orem are doing the same thing. We had Puka Nacua come through here a couple of years ago. And you never know, but you watched probably the All-Star game. He's a phenomenal basketball player, right? We got invited down to play in the Arby's Classic down in Tennessee a couple of years ago, basically only because Puka was on that team and they wanted to see him play. He's a football guy. And so that you have those stories and those examples that we can share. Is it going to be perfect? Is it always going to be that case? No, but you try to show them examples, and you try to create situations where it's okay that coaches share other athletes, as long as they know that they're sharing them and they're going to try to take them solely for their programs.
Yeah. And I think for the most part, at least it feels like amongst my colleagues at other schools, that the majority of the high school coaches are interested in that because it gives them access to a greater pool of athletes. And no, they might not be as skilled at said discipline, but their athleticism is such that they can figure it out. I think what happens is the noise outside of the schoolhouse, right? Outside of the education-based stuff, where you run into the message of specialization beyond what it is at the high school. And that's where, for the most part, we're a school that relies on multi-sport athletes and promotes it. And the majority of our student athletes, especially those that go on to the next level, are multi-sport athletes. You're still dealing with the noise of educating these student athletes when they first get here that, no, it's okay that you're a volleyball player and you go and play soccer and then run track. It's not going to take away from the outcome you're trying to reach, where if all you do is X,
you're enhancing the opportunity for injury. You are narrowing yourself into a lane that maybe you could be an elite track athlete if you gave it a chance. So how do you navigate that noise when somebody's coming into you as a freshman and they're like, yo, I just play volleyball?
Navigating that would be trying to put them in an environment where you share a commonality with another athlete. And for me, that's why I love strength and conditioning. When I was back in Illinois at Oswego East High School, I assumed the role as the school strength and conditioning program. And so we developed this program in the summer where it was an all school, all athlete strength and conditioning program. And so it ran for 8 or 9 weeks. We would start at 7 in the morning. We'd end about 4 in the afternoon. And we would have all these different groups. And we would try to connect programs similar and sometimes completely opposite of each other to put them in the weight room together. And so when you're grinding and when you're sweating and when you're able to rub shoulders with other athletes and you see the work that they're putting in, you're like, man, maybe I want to do this. Maybe he's getting or she's getting a little bit more out of their sport than what I am. And at the end of the day, it's word of mouth, right? So you have these kids that are like, man, I would really love for you to come out and play soccer, play football, play basketball. And so the peers are doing that work. It's not run by the adults. We're not trying to convince anybody to do it. We try to put kids in an environment where they'll get along and they'll build that trust and that love and that appreciation for one another. And we saw major growth. We saw kids, there's a basketball player that'll be coached. He's a 6'4", 210 basketball player. Dime a dozen, right? You're big in high school and you're good. He may even been 230. But he, phenomenal basketball player, physical inside, but you're 6'4". 6'4", 230, running about a 4'5", 40. You're going to make some money on a Sunday, right? So it was that putting him in an environment in the weight room with the football guys and having him run the 40 and having him run some routes. And he's, man, this is fun. This is something that I want to do. So there's that invitation that comes from the players that I think has a little bit more weight, has a little more teeth, and has more value than coming from a coach.
Yeah, that's a great way to frame that. I think at the end of the day, we often as the adults are on message all the time and we almost get to a place where it's the Charlie Brown parent of it's just wah, wah, wah. But when it's your peers and you're watching them have fun and you're sitting there as the one, no, I'm not doing this. I'm going to go over here. You're missing out on seasonal friendships. You're missing out on the opportunity to grow into something that you haven't done before. And as I reflect while you're speaking, it's almost as if that has been more successful as well here than the adults doing it as far as getting them over the line, right? We got to introduce them to it. We got to plant the seed, but then it's ultimately going to take the village to get them across the line and try something that you know, and I know they can be really good at, but they don't necessarily see that because they somehow identify themselves as X because that's what they've always done. Yeah. I like that description. How has your approach changed over the years, both as a coach and an administrator?
The approach has been, it's like golf, man. When I'm young, I feel like I can use that driver to get up to the green when it's like an iron would do. So it's just, it's learning how to adjust and how to adapt to, again, I've been in so many places, to the environment that's here, right? So I learned the hard way going from Chicago to Wyoming that I can't instill or almost force what I've done in the past, the war stories from NAM, and make it applicable to these kids who have no idea who I am. I have no idea my background, and they really don't care. What are you going to do for me? How are you going to grow me? Whether I go to the next level or not, it's trying to understand that it takes a little bit of time, a little bit of evaluation to learn where you're at, learn how you can make an impact where you're at, instead of just coming in guns a-blazing trying to change culture. When maybe the culture wasn't bad. Maybe the culture was okay the way that it was. Maybe it needs a little bit of tweaking. But I learned the hard way thinking that I needed to create a new culture for a place that already had culture and just trying to adapt to and to make it better in your own way. And so that's been a little bit of a different approach that I've had coming here as a coach, not thinking that how it was in Chicago and in other places is going to be the same here, right? It's different. When I was coaching in Chicago, to be honest, it was easy. They understood concepts and they understood scheme. And I could throw something at them on a Monday. We play Tuesday night and they're executing at a very high level. And when you come to places that maybe that's not the bedrock of who they are, they're not going to pick that up. So you have to adapt and adjust to maybe meet them where they're at, instead of saying, hey, right now I need you to get to where I'm at, instead of, hey, let's meet maybe halfway, or let me go to where you are to see where you're at and then bring you up. And the same goes for me as an athletic director. A lot of tradition here at Orem High School. Early 1900s, it changed to Orem High School in 1956. A lot of championships, a lot of culture, a lot of tradition, but not a lot of updates. Let's bring us into the 21st century a little bit with some technology and some facilities. And so I've had to adjust. I know the squeaky wheel gets the oil, but it's going to take a little bit of time, maybe even to where those bearings are a little bit rough before the wheel comes off. And so just having a little more patience and a little more understanding of where I go to, and not thinking that because of where I've been, that it's always going to work.
Yeah, no doubt. I think you said that earlier in regards to knowing your audience and how you deliver something at a particular time and place, what they're able to receive, what they're not able to receive, what they're ready for. What does patience look like when, you know, group X is getting Y, right? And group Z over here is, hey, why did they get to do X? And how do you figure all this stuff out without being reactive all the time? You mentioned the fire hose earlier, and how do you get out in front and be proactive and have some long-term plans versus some short-term plans. And as you mentioned, the golf analogy was great. It's like, why try to hit driver when the iron will do? And the same thing in your day-to-day management.
Right.
All right, let me ask this follow-up that I always curious about. As you're growing into this new space, what is something you've most recently changed your mind on? You used to be dug in over here and this was it and this wasn't up for debate, but now you've rethought it a little bit and you're over here now.
That's a good question. I think in terms of, I had a hard time in sharing and delegating. I'm one that I don't want to impose upon other people. I don't want to take away from what other people are doing. And so I'm just the grinder. I'm the foot soldier. I'm going to go out and I'm just going to do it. When it's easier and it's a little bit more efficient to create communities and to create groups of people that will assist you in that process. And it's okay to delegate, and it's okay to create systems. It's okay to create committees to help. And I think we live in a world where somebody wants credit. And I think if we could live in a world where no one cared about who got credit for something, it'd probably be a pretty good place to live. And so that's been a change for me, is not caring about who gets credit for an idea, not caring about whether I did it all myself or whether I established this group of people and we came up with a common goal or a common solution on something. So we're going through a process of rebranding, which is that when you're talking about a school that's as old as Orem is, people don't want to rebrand. This is how we've always done. These are our colors. These are our brands, yada, yada, yada. So anyway, it's trying to create a committee of people to be a part of that process that have been here for a long time. Give me some of your values. Give me some of your intake. And so we can come to a mutual decision on that. And I think since I've made that adjustment, made that switch, it's made things better.
I want to talk specifically about that for a couple of reasons. We went through that a few years ago. So I know what you're talking about. And I'm actually now, as we talked about off air, teaching a class at our state conference coming up in April on essentially digital communication and branding and things like that. So give me your soundbite here for the audience, for people that are at schools where there isn't consistent branding or where it's outdated. What does that process look like? Why would you even want to undergo it? What are your thoughts on that and the things that are most important as you begin to look at your brand? And I think often as a coach, you are appropriately having tunnel vision on your sport. But as the athletic director, you got to take a snapshot and you constantly have to be aligned and motivated by what's best for the entire program. But how do all those things intertwine to get you to the same place versus people being off brand, right? Or people doing things on their own, or even you not being consistent in how you approach things that impacts your brand negatively, even unintentionally?
For me, it was developing relationships with other coaches. As I was here for a couple of years coaching, I would get to know some other coaches and learn about what their brand was and what their style of coaching was. And then starting into the nitty gritty of, you know, we have all these different logos on so many pieces of equipment. And you look on our field and you look on our stadium floor and it's the same one. Why do we have so many other logos and even sometimes colors? We're the Golden Tigers and we're Victory Golds. We're not like the Notre Dame gold. We have our own particular color. And so we're not going away from that, but we have some programs that will. They have these offshoot colors and they have these offshoot logos. The biggest thing was we used to have the Oregon O here. We had the Sewell brothers, Panay Sewell and Noah Sewell. Their dad was the coach here. They all went to Oregon and he would go up there wearing the Orem O, which was actually the Oregon O that they had trademarked. And so they're walking through Torin and compliance officer comes and says, hey, what are you doing with that? That's ours. That's Oregon. And so we would have the Block O with the Tiger, the Detroit Lion, or the Detroit Tigers. And so really it spurred because we had some cease and desist orders that we couldn't wear certain brands and we couldn't have certain trademarks and logos and stuff. And so it led to this thought process of let's get all on the same page. And so I sought out Varsity Brands, the company that kind of does this. It takes a little bit of time to do it. And they create your branding guide. They give you limitations. They give you your logos. I think we get 5 logos, particular colors. And so we're in the undertaking right now where next year will be the first year where we have it. And so it's going to be a change. Our coach or baseball coach right now wanted, he's getting a brand new scoreboard and he wanted to put this Block O with the Tiger coming through the middle of it, which is the exact same as the Detroit Tigers that they have at their stadium. And can't do that, man. There's trademarks that go along with that. There's some legal sides of things that go along with that. It's been met with more appreciation that we all want to be on the same page, more support, because there are times where you have some old heads in the community that are like, man, why are we getting away from the tradition of what is Orem High School and what is Orem? And so it's been met with more support than it has been with the other side. And so, but it's a process. It's a process getting all the coaches on board. It's a process getting kids on board because there are certain Tigers profiles and there are certain O's that they appreciate a little bit more. And we can make it more specific to the sport. We can put a baseball diamond or we can put a basketball within it. But the core logos of and colors is what we have to stick with.
Yeah, and I think as you're finding out, the value of that becomes very clear once you get to the other side of it and there is consistency and you're wandering around town and people know what the logo means rather than, oh, I wonder what that is, right? And I think that is ultimately to answer the old heads, as you called them, the people that are wondering why you're doing this is so that our brand is stronger, right? It's right. Not
exactly,
not only the legal piece that you mentioned, but that ultimately there's a logo that represents us, right? So you're wearing the Stevenson jacket that you got from Thomas, right? It's got that S on it, which we floated around for a while. And as part of our rebranding right now, we ultimately landed where we had something created on our own similarly, right? That is the only thing we use now. And when our coaches asked to do something, my baseball coach just wanted to do something. It was like, no, it's not in the branding guide. And it's, look, it's a great idea. No, we're not doing it. And it's not, I'm not here to be the fun police, even though we are in our job. At the same time, it's, we're actually the gatekeepers of the brand. And right. How do you take that and leverage it to bring more identity and focus to your site than to take away from it? So I love that you're doing that. And athletic directors and leaders that are in your businesses and in your space that are looking and you don't have consistency in brand, it's one of the most important things you can do.
And they, it's led to our school administration wanting to be a part of it. Let's have consistency across the board. Let's use those same logos on diplomas, on shirts and things that we give out for things that kids that do in the academic space. And so they've enjoyed it. They wanted to be a part of the process. They've been a part of the committee as well. So it builds and it grows. So it does become a school culture.
No doubt. All right, let's wrap with this. What's the best compliment you've ever received?
Wow. Wasn't expecting that one. Best compliment that I've received.
Or if that one is not fun enough for you, what's an insult you've received that you're most proud of?
I don't know. I like both of them.
So answer both of them.
The compliment I think that I'm most proud of is that I try to be organized. I try to lead out with trust. I give people grace. I'm not trying to hold people down. I'm not trying to judge anybody on where they're at in their journey. It's more about just trying to build people up, having a passion for what I do, whatever it is that I do. And I think the insult, and it's a good question too. The insult that I'm most proud of is that I am too organized, that I don't give a lot of leeway for certain things in some categories. I'm not going to judge anybody, but at the same time, when you're the decision maker, when you're the head coach, the assistant coach doesn't get his name in the paper. It's sharing the sugar, as we call it, being okay to share the sugar. And again, like I talked about before, that's been a struggle, but the more people that get a taste of it, the sweeter it becomes.
Yeah. And I want to wrap with what you just mentioned, which is when you are an assistant, you are making suggestions. When you are the head coach or the athletic director, you are making decisions. And regardless of the reason or purpose for those, that's what it is. And even in your role as the athletic director, you are an assistant to the administrator, right? You are making suggestions about certain things that they have to decide on. And the organization piece and the role definition piece in any organization is going to be where you find your most, where you are able to find the most success based on people executing at a high level the roles that they have been assigned.
Yeah, absolutely. It goes back to the Nick Saban, man. If you want to make everybody happy, go sell ice cream. It's hard to be a leader in today's world.
Love that. All right, Coach, this has been great. Appreciate it. If people want to follow up or get in contact, where can they find you?
Orem High School Athletics. A lot of my contact is right there. Coach Jay Main on Twitter, or X as you call it now. I'll just leave it there. I won't say I have a Facebook page. I don't do the other stuff. I keep it to Twitter. There's a lot of great content out there. But a lot of kind of what we do, our structure that we talked about, programs and policies and things that we do here, you can find at the Orem Athletics page. A lot of breakdowns there.
This episode is brought to you by Element, spelled L-M-N-T. What is Element? It's a delicious sugar-free electrolyte drink mix. As a coach, we are constantly trying to find the best products for our athletes to train and compete at their highest level. Element is a great alternative to other commercial recovery and performance drinks and has enough sodium, potassium, and magnesium to get you feeling and performing your best. Plus, it has zero sugar, no artificial ingredients, and is gluten-free. With 8 delicious flavors, you're guaranteed to find one your taste buds will love. I know our athletes love the citrus salt. We keep a variety box in the office, and our athletes stop by every day on their way to practice and games to load up. At this point, they won't even touch another electrolyte product. Without amazing products and sponsors like Element, our podcast would not be possible. Right now, when you click on our affiliate link and place your first Element order, Element will give us 100% commission. Last thing, Element might have the best return policy on the planet. If you don't love it, you'll be instantly refunded.